Administrative assistant is on vacation. And at this time, I would ask Jim to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Jim. I'd also like to make a comment at this time that we have a request that if anybody knows or hears or gets messages about the Olympic results, that they not be revealed, because some of us like to go home and see it from TV. And having said that, I thank you in advance. I will entertain a motion for approval of the consent agenda unless there's some comments or questions.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to state a possible conflict with interest with the bill payable to the Board of Administrators.
So noted.
Mr. Mayor, I move for the approval of the consent agenda.
I second it.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? At this time, we'll have public comment. Hearing none, I'll move forward. Item 7 is Joel McCarroll. Right. Joel, would you like to come up?
Sure.
And Mr. Mayor, while he's coming up, let me just explain real quickly. Mr. Carroll's presence here. He's going to provide us a presentation about the roadside concept. This is a proposal that would attenuate Highway 97 roadway width between 3rd and 6th Street to include placing a portion of the roadway in a bicycle path. The overall intent of this transportation improvement project is to positively modify drivers' behavior and increase highway safety. And I might note that Mr. McCarroll was out here about a month ago, and he took quite a few of us on a trip along Highway 97 between 3rd and 6th. So we just get sort of an impression of what he wanted to do. He had also gone out previously and marked the road so as to give us a graphic understanding of his intent. But nonetheless, there are still some questions, possibly some concerns about the road diet concept. I want to note that we previously had a study done. It was called the Highway 97 Transit Corridor Study. And one of the recommendations of the corridor study was the road diet. And so what Mr. Carroll is here tonight is to kind of explain what that recommendation is and how that might be a benefit to this community. Sir.
Thank you. So just to go back in time a little bit, I didn't bring a bunch of visuals or anything, although I do have a thumb drive with some pictures and stuff if we want to look at a few things, because most of you were out there when we were walking around, so in a sense that would be a lot better than a lot of...
Joel, you can press the red button if you want to.
Okay.
That'll give us a little audio.
All right. How's that?
Sure.
Okay. So basic problem here is we have a short three-block section from 3rd Street through 6th Street where we have a five-lane section. It's constrained by a three-lane section north of that and a two-lane section south of that. So we have this wider cross-section that contributes to safety concerns but doesn't provide any real mobility benefit. Typically, five-lane sections contribute to higher speeds. In this instance, they're going to contribute to unsafe passing. And there's a fair amount of research that shows that wider cross-sections contribute to higher crash rates for cars and pedestrians. So you've got a section of highway that probably has, for three blocks, more disbenefits than it actually has benefits. So that's what the corridor study highlighted. We're just hoping that you guys want to implement that essentially first phase of the corridor study to narrow up the cross-section from 5 lanes to 3. And we'll do it just with restriping. So just kind of walk through what I've got there. So narrow roadway widths are associated with lower crash rates for vehicles as well as bicycle pedestrians. And the rationale for that is drivers entering the system have fewer lanes to cross and fewer conflicts as they enter across the highway. So you don't have to worry about crossing, you know, your crossing distance is shorter, there's not so many lanes, there won't be cars screening you. Speeds are lower, so drivers are more easily able to avoid collisions, and the severity of collisions is reduced. It's slower cars, the forces involved in a crash are that much less. There aren't lane changes and no passing, so we get rid of the sideswipe type crashes you might see in a multi-lane section. And then a specific kind of bicycle and pedestrian crash is eliminated, and that's the multi-threat crash. So that what we define as a multi-threat crash is, say you're crossing the highway, the car in the curb lane stops and yields for you like he's legally required to do, and the drivers occasionally do that. You start to cross the highway, the car in the fast lane keeps going because he doesn't see you because the stopped car is between you and him, and you don't see him. The same reason, you can't look through the car. So that multi-threat crash is frequently the cause of bicycle and pedestrian crashes on multi-lane highways. And that was actually the cause, I don't remember if you're on the Bend Parkway, about a year and a half ago, a gentleman was killed on his bicycle in front of his daughter. That was the cause of the crash. It was a car stopped in the slow lane, and then the car continued on the fast lane, and they never saw each other. So it seemed like, from when I was out here before, everybody seemed on board with the concept, and it was more or less the bicycle lanes that were causing some concern. And really, what we've got is a 60-foot cross-section, and we have 5 12-foot lanes. So if we go to 3 lanes, one through lane in each direction, and a center turn lane, we have extra space that we need to use. Normally that would just become shoulder. In urban areas, we typically mark shoulder as bike lane, so it defines where the bicyclists need to be, except in specific circumstances. In this case, because we have so much room, we provide, a 3 or 4 foot buffer between the travel lane and the bicycle lane. So that increases the comfort and safety of cyclists that actually do use the roadway. And from my time out here, I've seen there's not a lot of bicycle traffic, but there is some. There are people riding up and down 97 today, and those people are in the travel lane.
I know of one.
So, people were concerned. You know, some of the feedback I saw was people were concerned about the safety of bicycles on 97, and my thought is, I don't know that what we're going to put out there is going to attract a lot more bicycle trips, but certainly it'll make the bicycles that are out there today a lot safer than they are today. They're in the travel lane today, or riding, that urban riding style of up on the sidewalk, down in the travel lane, So we'll provide a space that's well defined, that's separate from through traffic for the bicycles, and in essence just uses up the space for something productive. And by providing that separation between the through vehicles and the bicycles, it reduces the likelihood that a bicycle will be in the blind spot of a right-turning vehicle because it'll be further out, which is actually the more likely cause of a crash in an urban area than just being struck from behind. That's actually a very rare type of crash. So with that, I guess I'd open it up for questions or comments. Or
Stu, any comments?
So, is this funded under ODOT?
Yeah.
And through which branch of ODOT?
The Highway Division. We our bicycle and pedestrian program has quick fix grants. And we're, so she's, Sheila Lyons, who's a bicycle pedestrian coordinator, has agreed to pay for the line removal and restriping it. So she's excited about the opportunity to have bicycle lanes and in La Pine, and I'm excited to not have to pay for that out of my maintenance budget. But if she wasn't willing to fund it, we'd figure out a way to do it. This is similar. We did the same thing in Crescent. It's different widths, but we went from a four-lane section down to a three-lane section a couple of years ago. And so we'd figure out a way to fund it if she wasn't.
But they also got sidewalks.
Well, that's a...
Phase two?
That's phase two. Sheila has also agreed to not just match, but more than match, the money you put up to put sidewalks right out here. So Steve and our staff are working on an IGA. I think it's dependent upon the cost estimate. The number we're talking about is $50,000 to match the $20,000 or so that you guys are putting up to do the frontage improvements right out front here. So
not just out here, but all the way.
No, that's one block.
One block. Okay.
Yeah. So it's this, you know, it'll be the swale and the sidewalk and associated improvements. So yeah.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that. We appreciate the generosity.
I guess I was one that wasn't on board from the beginning because I still have concerns about the safety. I mean, you know, living a block off of 97, I see a lot of the bicyclists and the way the traffic flows through here. I just am afraid for their safety if we do this.
And I guess my thought on that is, you know, my belief is where we define who has what space, that tends to lead to more safety rather than when we don't define the space. And currently for bicycles, there isn't any defined space on Highway 97. And they're out there, right? I mean, you spend a few hours out there, you see, you know, people riding around. I mean, it's not the Hawthorne Bridge in Portland, but there are a few out there. So from that sense, I think we're going to make it safer for them. And like I said, I don't know that we'll attract a ton of trips, you know, bicycle trips by doing that. But certainly for the people that are out there, it'll, in my opinion, be safer. Just by clarifying where they need to be. And then, you know, you'll have slow, you know, when you narrow that cross section for the vehicles, you're going to reduce speeds, which I think is the goal we all share. So I guess I don't see it negatively impacting bicycle safety or motor safety. In fact, I see a lot of things that will improve it.
So is it something we could test, and if it doesn't work, go back?
Well, it's pain. We can change it around. I don't want to say I wouldn't want you to agree to it for 6 months.
Right.
We can certainly look at, you know, we're going to need several years of crash. I mean, you need years of crash data to make a decision about ultimately whether something's had a positive or negative impact. So if in a few years, you know, we're saying that overall, you know, it's increased crashes, yeah, that would be something. You know, certainly we don't want to create an environment that's less safe. We would want to make sure that it is as safe, not as, you know, we want to have enough data to make a good
right.
decision. You wouldn't, for fender bender, you wouldn't want to be out there with grinders you know. But yeah, I mean, we'll, you know, we keep an eye on our stuff. We collect crash data, and that's, you know, we want to make stuff safer. If it was less safe, it would be an outlier in terms of all the other data that I've seen. But that doesn't mean it's not, you know, it could happen that way, but I tend to doubt it, so.
Don?
Are we going to continue a bike lane on up at least to First Street?
Yeah, we have a space to and we would end it at First Street.
Okay, so it'll go clear through to First.
Right, and then it would be a normal shoulder between Wiki up and
right.
First Street.
I like the concept. I'd like to see it go.
Dan?
You may have said this and I missed it, but does it have those It has markings to let people know it is for bikes. Mm-hmm. How wide will that lane be?
It'll be 6 feet, and then there'll be a 3-foot buffer space. So the 6-foot bike lane, so what defines a bike lane in Oregon law is an 8-inch stripe. So it'll have an 8-inch stripe, and then we'll put the bicycle symbols in it. And then there'll be that 4-foot space, 3-4-foot space between the bike lane and the travel lane, which will have transverse markings in it to kind of clarify that everybody's supposed to stay out of that. So.
Well, I don't think we have lots of bike traffic out there. I'm just curious, and I never know when I'm in a bigger city, it has all these lines out in the intersections. So what do you do if you need to turn into a driveway to the grocery store and there's a couple bikes there? I guess you just stop or pull in behind them, or if you just stop in your lane, then that stops everybody on the highway. Are you allowed to go into the bike lane?
You're allowed to enter and cross a bike lane to turn into a driveway or an intersection. But it's kind of vague. The law is kind of vague on when you can be in it. Like in California, you can actually drive in the bike lane to make a right turn. Oregon law is not quite that generous. So as a driver, that's something you have to judge about how closely you're passing a bicycle and whether you can turn in front of them. And so that's just a challenge of a right turn in an urban environment.
I'm just thinking, and then will there be there'll be center turn lanes like we have now?
Yeah, it'll be a little bit wider than what you have today.
So I'm just thinking, okay, if I'm coming south and I want to turn into Ray's, say, and there's a row of bikes passing through, do I just stop traffic? I guess you have to. And you would anyway, for bikes.
Yeah, I mean, you think about today, that you'd be in the right turn lane either ahead of them or behind
them. But there's a right turn lane.
We'll leave the right turn lane.
Or there's a B-cell lane there.
Yeah, we'll leave that there. And in that case, the bicycle lane will be between the right turn lane at Ray's and the travel lane. And then that's where, and south of there is when we transition to that full section, because you don't have that full width there.
I think our locals will have more trouble adjusting to it than people passing through.
I think I don't know that it'll change a lot. I mean, you watch people as for the most part, everybody drives in the left through lane. Very few people move over to the right turn lane except when they're turning right.
Right.
And you have the odd person that, passes on the right, but it's, you don't have that sort of 50-50 split.
Yeah.
So I think it'll work, it'll work out. So.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Kathy?
This isn't within the plan, but I do have a concern about safety, and I'll bring it up. There's a recreation park on this side of 97, and then the schools are all on the opposite 97. Yeah. And right here about Finley Butte, the kids and adults are crossing back and forth, either trying to go shopping, or kids go to the recreation park, or they go to school, and that's sometimes that's pretty dangerous too. And I don't know what the possibility would be to get a crossing lane somewhere.
You mean a crosswalk?
A crosswalk.
Well, certainly it would be easier to mark a crosswalk across a 3-lane section than a 5-lane section. And the corridor plan addresses that with the signal in view. But of course, neither you nor I have the money to put that in right now. That is on our radar. One of the things that when we worked through the corridor plan and got input from the freight industry, the reason the cross section looks the way it does is it allows for the installation of some medians if we think we need them, and still accommodate the overdimensional loads up and down 97 that we see on a somewhat regular basis. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in a pedestrian crossing that would, what we call a two-stage crossing, where you have an island in the middle of the road where the pedestrian crosses to the middle and then on the far side, then those are quite a bit safer. We have this cross section that we're proposing allows us to do those. There's going to be issues with vehicle turning movements and things like that at either side streets or driveways, which will be challenging to work through, but the cross section allows for the installation of those at some specific points.
And that's basically what happens. They get halfway through and then they have to stop and wait. Thank you.
I appreciate your input. I think your explanation here is dramatic in that you're going from a five lane where there's incidents of opportunity for accident so much more than when you're in a three, that it speaks for itself that it's much safer. So I'm all for it. So if there's no further questions, anything from staff?
Well, we could do a video. We could have Dan out there driving in his car and Joan in her bicycle, and then Dan has to get past Joan, and then we put that on our website, however that works out, and maybe YouTube too.
I'd make a motion that we do.
I have a safety card to help you immensely with that question.
Oh, thank you.
Does the council want to have a consent? Or,
Mr. Mayor, just another thought. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Hopefully with the economy, when it does return, you know, so many towns are looking for why not parking on 97? In that same width, isn't that the same width as car parking?
Yeah, well, so good question. Why not car park? All right, one, with all the streets and driveways, it would be difficult to park any cars and not have somebody blocking somebody's sight distance off the side street. The other thing is, all the businesses along here already have, for the most part, off-system parking. So on-street parking is, you know, there's a safety element to, you know, there's a negative safety element to on-street parking. You know, there's a, it's a, you know, it's another conflict point. And the third thing is, the freight industry, they wanted the width for over-dimensional loads. So if there's cars parked in there, that, then there's a conflict between their goals. We need to go back and revisit that decision. I suspect they wouldn't be real thrilled with that, but so I don't know that you know, it's not a downtown environment like Sisters or and I don't know that it's ultimately planned to be like that. So I don't know that on-street parking is going to be a real great thing for everybody. So
can we have council consent to move forward? Kathy, Dan. Don?
I agree.
Stu?
No.
I'd entertain a motion to move forward on this project.
I second it.
Oh.
Is that what you want me to entertain? I make a motion. Somebody else second it.
I'll second it. There's a motion and seconded to move forward on this project. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Let the record reflect that it's approved. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Joel, thanks for coming.
No problem. Thank you.
Great presentation.
Thank you.
And now I'd like to invite Mr. Farnsworth of ODOT Region 4 to present.
And while Gary's coming up here to make some comments, I just provide an overview of his goal here this evening.
Thank you.
He will discuss ODOT's State Transportation Improvement Program, which is known as STIP. This is Oregon's four-year transportation capital improvement program. It is a document. The STIP is a document that identifies the funding for and scheduling of transportation projects and programs. It includes projects on federal, state, city, and county transportation systems, multimodal projects, which are highway, passenger, rail, freight, public transit, bicycle, and pedestrian, and projects in the national parks, national forests, and Indian tribal lands. So it's a very extensive four-year program that's in place that is important to the city of La Fonda.
I'd add that I asked Gary about how this impacted the Wiki Up Junction interchange at Grade Crossing, and it has direct impact on it. And there's time frames here that are very important. So I'm extremely pleased that the council has the opportunity to hear from you.
Okay, well, thank you, Mayor, and
Council. Again, Gary Farnsworth, the area manager for Lodot Region 4 here in Central Oregon. Report to Bob Bryant as Region 4 manager. Joel is one of my peers, and we have another peer. His name is John Heacock. His son is best friends with Ashton Eaton. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Olympics, they roomed together at Oregon and went to high school at Mountain View. So,
but we have no idea how he did today.
And you're going to share how he did today, right?
No. I'm going to stop short. In fact, I don't know a lot, and I wait to watch when I get home. So, so thank you. And so Stephen teed us up pretty well. And I just passed around a handout, a presentation that we have been using in different places around the state. And so, yeah, the STIP is our capital program, just like a city or counties or many places have a capital improvement program. That's what the STIP is for us. And as Steve already outlined, it's just full of lots and lots of categories and lots of types of projects and lots of funding strings. And ultimately, it's the Federal Highway Administration through USDOT that approves the STIP, as we call it, for Oregon. So there's lots of pieces and parts to it. For me, it's an extremely complicated document, a lot of detail. But again, it boils down to, for us, for our highway division, it is our capital program. So it covers a lot of territory, from money that we use to fix roads, to repave, to fix bridges, to build new bridges, widen highways, add sidewalks, a lot of different things. The STIP process, I've been here for 12 years. We are on a course in ODOT to change that process more than ever. So perhaps for a relatively new city, that's not a bad thing. So you don't have to sort of relearn or unlearn what we've done in the past, and the material I put in front of you is really the way we're looking forward to how we plan on using it. And the premise of the changes we're making really has to do with, as Stu alluded to it, it's the economy. The economy just has a trickle-down effect on our revenues, both on a national and state side. The gas tax, both for state dedicated funds and federal dedicated funds, within the state of Oregon, we have the Highway Trust Fund, which the gas tax is dedicated to. Same on the federal level. It's a deteriorating source of revenue in many ways. It's not indexed to inflation, for example. We did see an increase here recently in Oregon, tied largely to what we call the Jobs and Transportation Act, which was pretty focused. That's great, but both on the federal and state level, we're seeing this all over the nation because of the economy, because of the buying power of gas tax, also because of what we're seeing in the changes that we've got in the industry and on the auto side for fuel efficiency also has an effect, a negative effect in the wrong direction, and lots of other factors. And we're scrambling like anybody else to try to figure out how to stretch our dollars as far as we possibly can to make sure, number one, that we don't lose the assets we have. And we have a great transportation system in Oregon, in my opinion, compared to a lot of other places. And we want to keep it that way. Also, we want to make sure that we're being responsive to issues for our communities around livability and the economy. So how do we do that? So that's what this is about. So let me go through this quickly. One of the things we're trying to do, and I talked about all the different categories and everything, and every category has a string attached to it of some kind, very focused and very siloed. And we're working very diligently to try to start breaking down those silos. And instead of taking an approach with our funding that says, you know, here's a pot of money for this thing, go do it, we're starting to take an approach where we're saying, what are the highest values overall and highest needs in Oregon for transportation? Let's make sure we've got those prioritized right, and then let the agency staff, our accountants, and so forth, figure out a way to make sure those things get funded, and try to stay as colorblind as we possibly can. So, as you see here, I've already mentioned the second bullet on that first page of the slides. objective here is to try to not only get the best bang for our buck, but really focus on every mode that operates in Oregon to make the system work. Also, striving to change. We've been doing a lot of talk around economy. The agency, since I've been here, has changed, but we truly are shrinking, trying to make sure that we're prioritizing how we shrink. So that's the first bullet. And then also make sure that we're creating the balance, both in terms of how we keep what we have working well, but also as opportunities present themselves to grow the system. And then making sure we're picking the most effective projects. So where we're headed, so in the past what we've done, and so from the Region 4 perspective, we'll get a range of allocations for a four-year period for fixing pavement, for fixing bridges, for adding capacity to the system, to taking care of our traffic signals and that sort of thing, sometimes adding new traffic signals. We get so much money for each of those pots. And try to figure out how to put the most into those. What we're shooting for now is trying to aggregate more and really sort of take all those categories of program and put them into two basic categories. One we're calling fix it, which is really more about just maintaining the asset, and enhance it, as you see there, is more about how we can be responsive to changes and additions to the system. In the past, we had a pretty significant what we call a modernization program, and great examples of projects funded by those programs included the Parkway in Bend and the Phase 1 of the reroute in Redmond on 97. In the last couple of cycles of the STIP, we've essentially gotten no allocation in that category. That has been taken away in many respects. A lot of the investments we made in the last decade were for bonds that were done for the OTIA, Oregon Transportation Investment Act 1, 2, 3, and now also even with the Jobs and Transportation Act, a lot of the revenue for that modernization program are being used to pay back bonds. So we've really lost the buying power. Anyway, so what we're trying to do in these two categories, again, is to aggregate these smaller pots and try to make sure we're putting them into the best use. So we have the fix-it, and the fix-it projects, we have what we call a management systems, where we are constantly looking at life cycle cost, best bang for the buck to maintain the asset, and very elaborate but very effective systems for pavement management and so forth. Enhance-it. What we're looking for is from our Transportation Commission, the Oregon Transportation Commission, and you probably know this, Tammy Bainey, Commissioner Bainey, in Chutes County, is also a Transportation Commissioner. They are looking to use the Area Commissions on Transportation. Ken is a voting member with Mayor and Councilor Greiner is the backup often, and Stephen attends those quite frequently. Has been a very effective forum across Oregon. We have 11 or 12 of them that do a great job of bringing the local elected officials and other stakeholders together on a regular basis to try to solve transportation issues. The commission is so pleased with how those have been operating that they're looking at this enhanced program and really turning it over to the area commissions and looking for them to, in an advisory mode, select, prioritize those projects and send them on to the Transportation Commission for, and ultimately to the Federal Highways for approval. So in the past, we've always taken our program to the area commissions as ODOT to say, what do you think? You know, get some understanding, coordinate, and so forth. We've always looked to the area commissions to help us prioritize our modernization program. Now what we're talking about is taking projects in this enhanced category and really relying on the area commission to help set those priorities. So again, the new allocation process, the fix-it project list will be shared, and in fact, I'm going to be talking about this. We have a technical advisory committee meeting tomorrow of Central Oregon Area Commission that will be talking more about how we're going to go about laying out these fix-it projects. The expectation is that our September meeting we ODOT will be sharing what we're thinking about those types of projects that will go into the program update. And then I'll get into this a little bit later. We'll talk about the benefits of the local partners knowing what our fix-it program is, so when we start to look at enhanced projects, we can coordinate those. So that's what those two bullets represent. Moving on, new allocation process. So again, we're looking at essentially a four-year program. And what I didn't mention was the update process. We have a approved capital program that takes us through 2015. We typically update every 2 years. What we're talking about now in this process is what will go into the program from years 2015 to 2018. And we always have an overlap. We update every 2 years for a four-year program. So when we're talking about these numbers, that's what they represent. So in those 4 years, about $1 billion, again, this is across the entire state, will be put towards this fix-it category and the large percentage, again, to make sure we maintain the assets we have. And about 320 will go into the enhanced category. And then those funds, both in these in both categories, will be allocated out to the five ODOT regions. Also, the Transportation Commission intends to hold back 20% of the enhanced category because they're interested in a lot of things, ranging from projects of what they would consider statewide significance to emerging needs and that sort of thing. The next one, the new allocation process, the Region 4 share of that, and again, Region 4 covers the 9 counties along the 97 corridor, Mammoth Lake, 3 counties here, and then 4 counties to the north. So again, over 4 years, we'll get about 10% of the allocation share, which is typical. Region 4 typically gets 10 to 12% of what gets distributed across the state.
That's just enough to do Wickett Junction.
Yeah, that's come up. But again, that's for all 9 counties. So that's what we're working with. And although it's better than what we've been looking at is essentially zero in the past for modernization project, this is significantly more than that. It also rolls up a bunch of smaller programs that cities and counties have been successful in getting funding for in the past. What we're going to do is, I'll get to what's going to happen in the process of how do we define these projects. The expectation is over the coming year, we're going to be working with all of our partners to identify and prioritize a list of projects. And we're going to go another 50% above what our allocation will be. And what that allows us to do is it allows us to refine those projects, prioritize them, and then also have an expectation of what it looks like beyond those funding categories. So say a project falls off at some point or we're able to lower costs, we can look at a prioritized list that's bigger than the source. So, you know, we stay in front of our needs. The next slide is pretty busy. I'm not going to spend a lot of time, but you can hang on to this. What would be, if you know the STIP, and I've been studying it for years and don't know it that well, there are still a lot of categories of project types, some of them affect local, that will not be included in this striation of program for different reasons. So that's just a quick glance at that. The way this will work, the process, is we will be soliciting applications from all of our partners, and again, we're going to focus on the process through the area commissions. Again, I mentioned we'll be looking at projects in the 2016 through 18 timeframe, possibly the 2015 timeframe. Projects not only can be brick and mortar, we can also look at projects that will do more on the planning and development side, Wickiup Junction being an example of that's what we've done up to this point. Short of construction dollars, we've been able to take a project like that and get it ready. And then also, just to clarify, only public entities will be allowed to make application. We'll be looking to opportunity to partner and co-application with a lot of our local partners. And then expect that ODOT will be applicants as well. And then the process, the general guidelines of this and how we'll roll these forward. Well, we're getting some very clear, basic direction and values from the commission and from the governor. Those will help to help us all decide, including the Air Commission's, how to prioritize those projects. The expectation is that each area will tailor their prioritization process according to the local flavor. Timelines, we expect that the call for applications will go out in the latter part of September, and we'll have until November to get those applications submitted. And then there's timelines associated with the coming year over how that will play out. The value, one of the values of this technical advisory committee meeting I mentioned for tomorrow is that we will have a chance to really kind of roll up our sleeves with all the local partners and talk about how we can support each other in putting applications together. ODOT will be looking to help the local agencies. We have, as Stephen knows, we have a lot of staff willing to help. So we will be trying to help. We have a couple of folks, Daryl Newton and John Condon in particular, are really focused on supporting the local programs. They'll be accessible. In fact, they should be there tomorrow. And we're going to make sure that as the local jurisdictions have needs and questions for putting together applications and how to prioritize, we want to be supportive of you in doing that. So anyway, probably more information you wanted to get today, but it's a reflection of how we do business, and we've got a lot of folks that are looking for funding opportunities. Not a ton of money, relatively speaking, but there is enough here to get us off the table and try to come up with the highest priorities for Central Oregon, at least, and get those projects in the pipeline.
Any questions? You've used your time. I'm going to move down here. Dan?
I don't think so. I think you were very thorough, and thank you for that.
Don?
Well, I think we're all pretty much
okay
in agreement on it.
All right. Staff? Stu?
I'm going to attend the meeting tomorrow at 2.
Okay.
It's at Road City Hall.
Yes.
I understand it goes till 4.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know if anyone else wants to go. Welcome to come with me. I'll leave about 9 so I can get there by 2.
I know how you drive, yes. Gary, thank you very much for the presentation. It brings a lot of information to us that's important at this time, and we're extremely appreciative.
Sure, and if I may,
please,
just a little bit, I don't know if we'll get this to be a segue for a future discussion, but we've got the transportation system plan work underway, or at least we've got everything in place with Kittleson and Associates. For me, and I share this with every community, those are very important to me, that we get those worked out and get them in place from every community's perspective, because they really help us clarify alignment between ODOT and our local partner, right, on what's needed and what the priorities are, and it really gets us to a state of understanding it, and it helps us identify what the highest priorities are from place to place. Now, you're going to be sort of in the middle of that, so I think all the more reason to make sure we find some opportunity with staff to sit down and talk about, you know, what those priorities might look like, and make sure we get good applications moving forward.
And I think we'll be hearing back shortly from Kittleson, and the involvement, where they are and everything. So you're right. So anything else? Thank you very much.
Thanks
for coming.
Yes, you're welcome.
Thank you, Gary.
I'm not going to get up. Am I?
Fine.
You can stay right there.
Oh, okay.
All right, because the next item is also an ODOT item, and that is, as you know, I'm sure that most of the general public knows, there is a need for an overpass that would reconcile the at-grade separation of the northern, the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad that traverses across Highway 97. I understand it's the only at-grade crossing on Highway 97 still remaining?
In the state of Oregon.
Okay. And what it does is it poses a real safety issue. And for those who are on the roadway and they have to stop for the railroad crossing because it comes every hour or two, I timed it the other day because I was out doing some traffic study. And it's about 6 minutes by the time because the arms come down about a half a minute before the train comes by, and they don't go up until about a half a minute after the train goes by, and it takes the train a couple minutes to go by. But then you've got this huge queuing that has to be reconciled to get back up to speed again, and by the time you get back up to normal speeds, you've wasted about 6 minutes of travel time particularly for the freight industry. And this Highway 97 is the backbone for our freight industry, and so to the extent that there's more and more trains, it impairs the ability to move freight quickly through the community. So the solution is to have an overpass that will go over the train tracks. It'll start up around Gordy's, and it'll come up and over and kind of swing to the east and then come back to the west and intersect back on 97 about halfway between Burgess and First Street. Okay? And it'll have on-ramps and off-ramps. And in order to make that process occur, ODOT needs to have an agreement with the city. And so we've gone back and forth, and we've got a draft cooperative improvement agreement. I think Gary and I have had our piece back and forth. We kind of know where we are on this thing. I've turned it over to our attorney. He's going to review it. I spoke to Mr. Green today. He thought he'd have his comments for ODOT to review tomorrow. And I think we're close to soup, let's put it that way. And so the item before you is approving this cooperative agreement with ODOT to provide for certain transportation services and subject to the city attorney's ability to make for further contractual modifications if necessary. Okay, and the agreement is again to perform all the work associated with developing this alternative transportation system for eliminating the at-grade intersection. And so I'm asking you folks to consider approving this, again subject to the attorney's ability to, further the negotiation process if necessary. And I'm glad to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Stu?
I know there's been concern about dividing the residents up there from the rest of the community. Has that been addressed in this?
Yes. What we've tried to do is, in language that we could come to some kind of mutual accord, is identify that there is disconnect that is created by the overpass between the Cable neighborhood and Wickiup Junction, and that now there's Burgess to rely upon to get you over there, but you won't be able to rely upon Burgess because that portion of Highway 97 just north of Burgess on 97 up to the grade separation will be removed, and so anyone in the Cable neighborhood will have to come down and go back around in order to go up to Wickiup. And obviously that causes a couple concerns. One is impact upon the retail in Wickiup, and there's roughly 75 different businesses or business lots over there, and 350 homes over in Cable neighborhood. Okay. So what we've sort of agreed to as a solution is, as Gary notes, we're about to embark upon a transportation system plan. Kelson and Associates has been awarded the contract. I believe we're going to have our first meeting, and I expect this to go on for about a year, next week. And as part of the scope of work, we will look at the issue of disconnect between cable and Wikia and see if we can't come up with some ways to address multimodal, some ways to still get people out of the car and reduce transportation trips, some way to create a compatibility between the two, and some effort to try and minimize financial impact on the Wikia Junction businesses and resulting from this process. Okay. So it's a lot to look at, but you know, it's this overpass is important. And so how do you do that and also try and do all these other things? It's going to be a challenge. Okay. But at least ODOT is receptive to looking at the challenge. Okay.
Thank you. Very, very good, gracious response. We've had some good discussion about this.
Well, as long as you're...
Yes. Yeah. Even if it's not in the scope, we will make sure we're working on it.
That's good. It's important for us. You know, you're trying to balance a community's interest against a statewide highway interest. Sometimes they can readily accommodate each other, and sometimes they just bump up against one another.
Well, I think also there's a significant safety issue here that has been proven right here by the new number of accidents and that have happened at that crossing. So
and the intersections.
And the intersections, right. Specifically the intersection. So is there any further comment? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to approve the cooperative agreement with ODOT to provide a certain transportation service subject to the city attorney's ability to make any further corrective modifications if necessary.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make that motion.
Motion? Second.
Second.
Moved and seconded to approve the cooperative agreement as stated. Further questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Let the record reflect that it's unanimous. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And I should learn to know when to shut up, but I will make one comment. And that is, you had suggested during the STIP process about getting this funded. One of the reasons why this agreement came forward when it did was because our rail division somewhat unexpectedly offered us up another $2.3 million to continue getting this project ready. So we've been working on that for a long time. What we'll be able to do now, and thank you for supporting the getting this agreement done, the agreement was pivotal in securing those funds, is we will now be able to get the plans ready on the shelf for construction and all of the right-of-way that's necessary to build the project cleared. And we will be ready to hit the ground running within the next year or so. And that is a huge leverage point for funding sources.
So if stimulus money pops up one day, shelf ready. Yeah.
And knowing how important this is to ODOT's rail division, how important this is to Burlington and the greater community, it puts us in a very, very good position.
All right.
And we're talking about a $20 million estimate, but my line to folks is readiness is money, and this will put us in really good shape. So great support from our rail division to get to this point.
Excellent comments. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you. Again,
and thank you for coming.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you, Joel.
Thank you. We're probably going to leave and go watch the Olympics.
Let me give you my text.
Yeah. So how did it go today with the Olympics?
Get away from there.
I'm not going there.
Okay. Item number 10, approval of agreement with Lapine Chamber of Commerce whereby they will receive and expend public monies, TRT revenue, on behalf of the city to include the manner and method for expending and reporting the expenditures of this revenue.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
And a few words?
Please.
Okay. What precipitated this agreement is the fact that we're dealing with public monies, and public monies need oversight. Anytime we apply for a grant, for instance, we're getting ready to apply for some kind of a coordinated funding with ODOT to improve our frontage. And I can assure you that they will ask me probably on a weekly basis to report back how we're spending the money, what we're spending the money on, just to have the assurances that those public monies are being spent correctly. And so when I looked at the TRT funding, I saw that previously there had been a contract in place to provide some oversight, but the contract had expired. And so I said, well, it serves the public's best interest, the city's best interest, to reactivate that contract so that there are provisions in there to ensure the integrity of the money. Now, I know that I've had several people talk to me, well, there's more to it than that. And truly there is. I mean, I just want to make sure that the monies are safely spent. There is no message to anyone that we think that there's anything improper going on with how the monies are expended. This is just a control device that every city should entertain when it asks other people on its behalf to look out for public monies. Because if something goes afoul with those public monies, then it comes right back on you folks. Right? You're finally responsible for any monies that you give to anyone else and how they're spent. Okay. We had this before the council at a couple meetings. We've talked back and forth. I do want to suggest an addition to this agreement that's before you. It's been before you before and also been reviewed by our attorney. This is the attorney's release. And that is, I believe that there ought to be some kind of cap on the amount of TRT monies that are relied upon for payroll purposes. Okay. Well, if you'll agree with that or not, but I recommended that at the work session, and I suggest in the same breath that that be someplace between 20 and 50%. Okay. Don't know if you want that in there or not, but that just assures that those monies are mostly spent for products rather than for payroll.
Okay.
And that's my comments.
All right. Thank you very much. And we've had a lot of discussion about this. Is there any one that wants to make comments?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to suggest perhaps for discussion a 35% cap. I know it may not be popular, but I believe just for the public funds, we should discuss that.
I think we've discussed at length the cap. Do you want to make a motion? Are you want to discuss it, or do you want to make a motion?
Okay, I'll make a motion for a 35% cap on TRT funds that would go towards payroll.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
There's been a motion and a second to limit the expenditure of TRT funds for payroll to 35%. Discussion? Hearing none?
Would it be possible to hear from the chamber if that's possible, if that will even work for their model? Or is it just some arbitrary?
I think it's up for the council to decide at this point, but it's the will of the council.
Well, agreements have to be signed by two parties to be, you know, to work, so I guess I'm just trying to find out if that's something that's doable. Or do we just want to...
Well, I just, at this point, following the rules, we would move through the motion.
Okay, and then I would have another question is, has this been discussed with the attorney, with our attorney?
Our attorney is, let's put it this way, I advised our attorney that as part of his construction, that the council was still mulling things over, told him about our conversation at the last work session, and said, if there's more changes, I will forward you those more changes so that you could incorporate those more changes. So if, in fact, you make a motion to have a cap provision, then you probably want to direct staff to have the attorney construct this thing to include that language as part of the motion, so that we do one and the other in the same breath if you're going to do the one or the other. Okay?
Well, if we decide to put a cap on it, I'd like to know that the attorney believes that we can do that.
Oh, I've discussed it with him, and it's my belief that he feels that we can do those. Well, first of all, he just pointed out the obvious. He says, you know, the city itself could do the TRT monies if we so wanted to, and however we wanted to slice or dice it.
My concern about that is whether you can still have an independent contractor and dictate the percentage that they can apply to labor.
Well, why don't we do this? If, in fact, you make that motion, then I will bring that up with Jeremy. And if he, after further consideration, doesn't believe that we have that wherewithal, then I would bring that back to the work session. Next work session. But, you know, again, I've discussed this with him. I think he would have said something to me about, no, you can't go down that path, if, in fact, we couldn't go down that path. But I'm glad they asked the question again, because I did not specifically ask him that question that way. Okay. But again, you have a motion on the table.
Yes.
Mr. Mayor, there's a little bit more discussion. It would seem to me like having a contract with an independent contractor using public money is a whole lot different than you as an independent person having a contract with me, an independent person, because it's your money and my money concern, not public money. And I think this is what we're concerned about. It's public money and having some sort of an oversight.
Okay.
And again, I want it understood that I certainly don't think any of the money has been misappropriated, abused, or anything else. It's a matter of just being fiscally responsible. That's my opinion.
Okay.
Point of information, Mr. Mayor. In any of your independent contracts, do you cap the amount of money that they use to pay the people that are waiting for you?
We'll hold the comments at this time. I'll ask for a all those in favor of the motion.
Aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Let the record reflect that the motion passes the council 3-1 and is therefore approved.
Well, Mr. Mayor, again, can you expand on the motion a little bit to direct the modification? And then and to also direct the inquiry that Dan has suggested, so that we do it in its entirety.
Yes.
All right. Would you friendly amend your motion to embrace that we're going to direct the attorney to add the language absent some liability for imposing a condition on an independent contract?
Yes.
Okay.
Is that sufficient?
Yes. That's official, I believe. If that's the agreement, I think you need to say, yeah, we support what...
Yes, I support that fully.
Now, is this the contract in whole at the 35%?
Right.
Okay, yes.
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 Okay.
Okay. We're at item 11, solicitation for a labor law council advising the public of the city's intent to solicit a proposal for a qualified law firm to provide certain labor law services. If the need for those services should arise, known as City Attorney Jeremy Green with Bryant, Loveland, and Jarvis, PC, provides for all legal services needed by the city except for labor law and bond council services. Staff?
All right, Mr. Mayor, just the intent here is to add a labor law council to our legal portfolio. We may or may not use their services, but if we need their services, then we don't have to go through Mr. Green and his organization to go find somebody on our behalf, but rather we can deal with them directly. And we have a draft template for your review that would be sent to the various firms, and we're thinking at least five that are in this kind of a labor law specialization, and seek you know, their request for providing the services, and then whatever whatever they came up with, then I'd bring back to you a recommendation for a law firm to provide those services. And I just, more than anything, wanted to let you know that we're in the throes of doing this, and assure that you are comfortable with us soliciting for that kind of a service. You're finally going to have to decide whatever selected, whether you want to go that way. But it just assures that we're well-rounded as a public agency in our legal consultation.
Thank you. And I guess I would just ask if there's questions. If there's not, then I would ask for consent that we direct the city manager to proceed with solicitation for labor law counsel as he's described.
Sounds good.
Don?
You need a motion?
No. No, just consent. Or we have consent that okay. Please proceed.
Thanks. All right.
And our next item on the agenda, we're moving right along toward the Olympic scores. And
getting close.
General council discussion on the economic development for Central Oregon EDCO board. The council recently decided to join EDCO, so we know about that, and this is a issue around who would serve, and it says for the Central Oregon EDCO board. I would clarify that by saying that we currently are at an EDCO level of providing a representative, and the idea is to decide or look into who that representative would be. I have had feedback from Vic Russell, who we all know to be a staunch and well-versed Lapine community activist in business and these pieces of process that at EDCO provides, having been a long-term board member of Liggy, who says that he would be more than glad to do that if the council was willing. And I know that we have a counselor that is also willing, and it's the I think it's just a discussion that we can resolve it. Comments?
who's the counselor?
Stu would like to be considered also.
I volunteered. I've been managing a business for about 20 years in McLean myself. And, you know, like any other counselor, or even like Mr. Russell, I know some of the other board members. I'm like, they're on the Economic Development Board.
Can't hear you.
I'm sorry. That was my software.
Push the red button.
How's that? So when this all came about, I did volunteer, to sit on that. Currently, I have been managing the business here for, 20 years. And so, I'll throw my hat in there, but if, council thinks someone else, I even approached Councilor Barco if he'd be interested. So I don't know if he's considered that anymore, but I think he'd do a good job. So we do have several good people that are interested. And I'd be more than willing to see Councilor Barco do it.
Thank you. Councilor Barco, would you speak to that? I support you, Stu. I think there's some great opportunity here, whichever way we go. But Dan, I think this is a great opportunity.
I guess, the only thing I would say is that, it's likely that I would attend a fair amount of those meetings either way. I guess the role is just kind of liaison between the city and IDCO, right? And I don't know. I don't know if it makes a whole lot of difference as long as we have representation and liaison. And so I'm involved in a lot of things. I guess I'd like to see Stu or Vic because the more people that are engaged, in the community, the better. I guess as long as there's other people that are willing to do it, I guess I would like to have them do it because I'm going to be involved either way.
Yeah. Well, with that, then I'll withdraw my interest in it if Mr. Russell is very willing to do it.
Yes, he said he was last night. Before last night.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
I think it's a practice on the council if one of us is assigned to a committee that we have an alternate assigned also, or in this case perhaps it might be, pardon me, it might be well to have co-chairman. And I know Mr. Russell, I know Councilor Martinez, and they're both very capable people, and I'd like to see them, if there's some way to do it, to appoint them both either as a co- or one to take the place if the other one is unable to attend.
Beat me to the punch.
I like that idea.
My idea was is that this be a partnership.
Mr. Russell could be the lead and I'd be the...
That was what I was going to suggest, if that would work for you. I think it's a perfect opportunity for us to have a community member involved, which I think that'll be respected by the community, and then to have a direct connection with the council by somebody who's got the feet on the ground in the same aspect. So I would ask the council for consent that we do it that way. Or do somebody want a motion, or is consent adequate?
I'm just saying the direction.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And then maybe we would do a letter or something to Mr. Russell. defining the fact that,
And you need to notify
EDCO. That's all of that. So we have the council in consent for the city manager to move forward with describing it in this fashion. Thank you. And thank you, Stu. I'm more than pleased that we have your expertise.
Thank you, Councilor and Mr. Mayor.
Approval of a personal services agreement. This section would continue Rick Allen's association with the city as a public works liaison through September the 30th, 2012, for purposes of assisting the city with any number of public works processes, including the federal land swap, City Hall landscape project, Cagle neighborhood tree removal project, state land use transition process and negotiations, with USDA to conclude the loan transfer process. The compensation would be at the rate of $65 per hour, not to exceed $2,500 per month for the months of August and September. Steve,
Mr.
you want to?
Mr. Mayor, yes. I've talked to Mr. Allen and also Mr. Green, our attorney, and I think we have a little bit different proposal. I asked Mr. Allen, or Mr. Green, if we modify what we put out for public information, whether that unto itself would cause us to continue this item. And he said no, because where we're suggesting back is kind of is consistent, but a little bit different tack. Back in March of 2012, you entered into what is known as Amendment Number 4 with the employment agreement. What is suggested instead is that we enter into a continuation of this agreement would be Amendment Number 5 with Mr. Allen. And one of the reasons for that is if we go with because the way this personal services agreement works, the way it works, if it has the potential to go more than $5,000, you got to put it out to bid. And if you put it out to bid, then it's probably going to take us 6 weeks or so to bring you back something. And so our ability to work with Mr. Allen in the interim just stops, okay? And where we really need Rick's assistance, I think, in the near future, is mostly with culminating this agreement with USDA. He's been back and forth, and those folks over there are just really difficult to work with. And so he's been able to influence them and get them, you know, shepherd along as best he's able. And I think we need that continuation. And then I've noted some of the other things that we're working on that I certainly could use some help with. So after discussion with Mr. Allen and Mr. Green, I'm going to ask counsel to authorize me to enter into a negotiation with Mr. Allen for a month-to-month continuation of this employment agreement with provisions he work a maximum of 20 hours a week. And that way, that avoids us having to pay any kind of employment benefits. And that his salary range be somewhere between $15 and $25 per hour. The $65 was based on him being an independent contractor,
right,
doing his thing. And instead, we're saying, if you're going to be an employee, then, you know, what's the marketplace dictate here? And we think that the $15 to $25 range is more in keeping with what his services would be worth to the community.
Okay.
So that's kind of where I'm just looking for some authorization to continue this for some time certain at those hours, that range, if that be your goal.
Council? Kathy?
Yeah, I agree to that, and Mr. Allen's willing to work for that salary.
Okay.
And that was my question. Did he agree to work for $15 an hour?
Well, he hasn't said 15. We're going to start low and see where we go. I was going to throw some food stamps in there, too. But
okay, well, I just
you know, he's probably listening to every word here. He's saying, I think the better thing to do is, why would you want to pay him that much money?
Because he's valuable.
Well, you said $15 an hour.
I did. Well, that was what Mr. Green suggested that I say to him. I'm going to blame our attorney.
Well, I'm not going to offer, I don't want to offer $15 an hour.
Okay. All right.
$25.
Well,
would you say 25 to 50? I mean,
how can you offer a range?
Well, I mean, they're going to negotiate this.
Be an employee of the city.
They're going to negotiate this. Is that what I understand?
That's what we're going to do. We're going to negotiate this.
Something between 25 and 50.
Okay.
50?
I misunderstood. I thought you said $15 an hour.
a range of 15 to 25 was what I was suggesting.
I don't think you can get this kind of expertise in consulting for that kind of dollar.
Okay.
You know, I think we need to be realistic. I don't want to offend somebody and have them jump off the ship here.
Yeah, that's right.
Good.
I would second what his thoughts were, and that's why I asked if he would be willing to do that, because he's very valuable, and I appreciate all he has done for this city.
Mr. Mayor, I think we ought to allow our city manager, present city manager, as the major go-between or negotiator. I think we should allow him to go ahead and negotiate the agreement, and if we wanted to set a cap on or something like that, that he'd have to come back and agree to. But I think that knowing Mr. Allen and knowing our present city manager, that they'll come to a fair agreement.
I'm just trying to make sure that we're conservative in everything we do.
Yeah.
All right.
Stu, do you want to?
Steve, you could write down the different prices on a sheet of paper and pull them up, put them in a hat, and let him draw one out. No.
Can I?
Is this like dialing for dollars?
You know what? I think that I've heard it pretty well said here that we should allow the city manager to negotiate with Rick Allen and not place a cap on that, and then come to an agreeable amount that is good for Mr. Allen and good for the city.
Okay, so a cap of $15 an hour?
I have a hat in the other room.
No, and no cap.
Okay.
Sue?
Yeah.
Okay. I'd entertain a motion to that effect.
I so move.
Thank you. I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Unanimous?
Thank you. Okay.
Okay, item 14 is discussion possible action concerning a contractual agreement with HGE and Associates for purposes of preserving the city's water rights. I'd just like to add here that without reading that whole thing, we had a very defined description of what HGE proposed at our last work session, and unless there's some need to redefine that or re-elaborate on that, I'd ask the city manager to bring us a short
bring agreement back. Okay, it's real critical that we preserve our water rights, and this gentleman has the capacity to assure that we do everything in our capacity to get there. And the cost estimate is $3,500. And I think for the money, this is something that we can't afford not to do.
Is there any questions about it?
No, I don't think so. My only concern is when this was first brought to us, I just couldn't understand how it could just drop, how it wasn't followed through. And that would be, you know, the priority now is to make sure that we do this, it gets handled by the right people and followed through correctly.
Sure. Stu? Don?
We had an explanation at the work session. I'm all for it.
Dan?
Yes.
Okay. I'd entertain a motion that we direct the city manager to move forward with this agreement with HGE for the purpose so stated.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Unanimous. Proclamation for Pat Yeager, recognizing her years of public service and declaring August 30th, 2012 as Pat Yeager Day. You have in front of you the proclamation. I will tell you that the body of it was written by the school system, and we added the flourishes.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
As a sidebar, and this goes back a couple months ago, we discussed the proclamation, and as a consideration of the proclamation was to honor Ms. Yeager with modifying one of our street names.
Thank you. Okay. Yes.
And we found a street named Reese that is on the west side of, it flanks the west side of the elementary school there on Burgess. It's a short road. And at that time, there was a suggestion that perhaps that should not be considered for the street to honor Ms. Yeager, because that was named after a pioneer of the community. And then there was the question of whether or not there had been some process to honor that pioneer family by that naming process. So I went back and researched it, because you know, certainly what we don't want to do is to honor someone and take away someone else's honor in that same process. I mean, that's a zero sum. But I did research, and however that got to be named, the name it has, was not through any kind of analysis and honoring process or proclamation process according to the county. It was just determined to put a name out there, and that's the name that they put out there. And it may be associated with the pioneer name or it may not, but it wasn't some honor-based product. So if you do decide to rename that street, it is a city street. You do have the authorities to do so, and you can if you wish. So I would have you, make a look at this proclamation. If in fact you want to rename the street, I'd have you provide me some direction to have it renamed. Okay.
So we'll talk about two things. First, let's talk about the proclamation. Any comments about the proclamation itself?
I think it's appropriate. We need to do it.
I do too. I'm for.
Dan?
I'm all for it. I do have a question of clarification, wondering if the very last line says Pat Yeager has written a book on mentoring, administration, and teaching. Is that literal? Is that she's written a literal book, or is that just a
it's not literal.
Okay.
So it's figurative?
It's figurative.
Okay.
I guess it doesn't matter. I just...
Yeah,
and I want to get the book.
Yeah, I think it was two people worked on this, the principal of the high school and one of his staff, senior staff, and that was.
That's what they wanted.
Yeah.
That would raise a question. I know, because that's what I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, then so the second subject is to, and we can roll this into a motion, to rename Reese Way, Pat Yeager Way, in honor of her and this event. Stu?
Can you always start here?
No, don't go there.
I think it's appropriate to rename the street next to the school where she, you know, is a current or was a current principal. And I think we should move forward with both at the appropriate time.
Okay. Don?
I'm in favor.
Dan?
Yeah, I'm still concerned about the Reese family, but I guess we can't do much about that. So, I mean, I don't know what we could do about it. I've thought about it, and I just put myself in their shoes, and if my street disappeared, I wouldn't be feeling too good about it.
Yeah.
Well, there was also the thought of renaming the other street for them.
Which would be?
Which street? The one over here off Huntington.
If we could do something like that, I mean, you know, I would really, that'd be fine. And we don't have to overcomplicate this thing, but I just, even if it wasn't some special honor, once a street name is given, and if it's for a family that has people that know about it, it just, you know, concerns me.
Well, I think that the city manager has researched this to the depth that there's no,
I talked to two folks over at the county, and they both went back through the record to see if there was anything that was the basis for specifically naming that particular road in that fashion, and there wasn't. Now, one of the things that I'm hoping that we will do in the future, as time allows, to reconcile this whole, you know, uncomfortable level, is to have a street naming policy. And then that'll give us some guidance as to, you know, when we do it, how we do it, what's appropriate, all that sort of stuff, okay? Because most communities have a street naming policy, and that is to take the awkwardness out of doing something like this. You want to do something because it's the right thing to do, but you're just cautioned. You haven't done it before. You know, is it right, is it wrong? Does it have any other implications? And I'd just like to sage all that out in the future, that we just don't have that problem.
Okay. With that having been said, I'll entertain a motion to accept the proclamation for issue and rename Reese Way Pat Yeager Way.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it. And we are getting close. Other matters, and I see under other matters, scheduling 6-month performance review for the city manager. We probably all remember, or most of us remember, that this was in the beginning an ongoing process of hiring a new city manager. We had looked at this as a milestone or a mark of doing a performance appraisal for whoever was selected. I talked to the city manager about this, and
you bring up the name Roger Jordan.
Yes, and we talked about the support we had out of what I will call the Range Rider, rider Roger Jordan. And I have spoke to him as to whether he would be interested in being involved, and he said he was. And I told him that I would take that information to the council for their consideration and deliberation, and maybe set something for middle of September. So there's the information, council, and.
I have to start being nice to
people? On a more regular basis.
Is driving skills involved in this?
Not sure.
Absolutely not. He blocked the road on the way down here along with some young lady on a bicycle, which created a big traffic hazard.
Traffic calming strategy.
Now, yeah, traffic calming. You saw how they slowed down.
Kathy?
Yes, sir. What?
Consent of the council to...
oh, for me to...
Move forward on...
Yeah. On the schedule.
On scheduling a performance review for our city manager. Dan?
Sounds good.
Okay.
Don? Yes.
Stu? Okay. Huntington Meadows Neighborhood Cleanup Day, September the 8th.
The next item, the Huntington Meadows neighborhood, we've had that there is a, first of all, I'll just stop, go back for a moment. There is a homeowners association in Huntington Meadows.
Can you hear?
Can you hear okay? No. Okay. There is a homeowners association in Huntington Meadows. And those folks are trying to refocus the neighborhood, give it some strength and purpose, and they need some help because there's a lot of renters in there. There's some activities in there that aren't appropriate, and we've had discussions with them, and the thought was, how can the city, in concert with the homeowner association, the neighborhood in general, put their best foot forward and make sure that they understand that the city is here to help them and how we do that. And so the thought was, well, we could start that out by just having a cleanup day. We go over there, and I think that Wilderness Garbage has been gracious enough to say that they would provide a dumpster over there to help clean the neighborhood up. We might have a barbecue. We could have a street dance. There's any number of things that we might do to let the neighborhood know that the city cares, and also just to gain a better perspective of the neighborhood and its issues firsthand. So the thought was, well, let's have a neighborhood cleanup day. Let's do it September 8th. Let's involve the council. Let's involve the community and see where we go. So that's what's on the table for consideration.
I'd like to add some comments at this point. I have met with the HOA, and I would all, you know, and I understand some of the issues, and I know the city manager has met with them here at City Hall. I would like to just review that last fall that we all the council spoke directly to our doing a full court press on providing help in the form, in those forms necessary to bring some order to the issues that are over there. And I think this is an excellent way for us to participate without taking, you know, it's a self-help thing, and they are more than willing to step up and do what they need to do and be involved, and it's an opportunity for us to help. We can bring individuals from the sheriff's department, the fire department, and even our own public works to be there, answer questions, and deal with some kinds of issues like that where there's a face-to-face, plus go along with cleaning up the yards, the streets, and this is their part, but and having that that available container there to put the specified type of yard debris and stuff like that in there. I think it is an excellent opportunity for the city. So.
I might add to that we were hoping, I don't know how valuable it will be, that Joan may be able to come over and have something with the rec that would try to encourage some of the kids to get involved if they can, if the parents will help them, rather than the activities they've born for themselves with nothing else to do.
One last thing I'd add, just to carry the conversation a little further, is that I'm ready and willing and agreeable to step up and sort of lead the city's charge on organizing it from the city side, and if that's the will of the council, and if somebody else would like to do that, Stu or Don or one of you that aren't so busy. And having
said, be out of town that week.
Yep.
No, seriously.
Yeah. But and the only thing I would maybe ask Councilor Egan to think about is she lives in the neighborhood, and I don't know if you want to think that's a conflict of interest or there may be a conflict there. No,
I don't think so.
Okay, no. Because it's really a class, the whole neighborhood.
Well,
so.
And keep in mind that each one of you represents different constituencies.
Sure.
And for heaven's sakes, I would think one of the constituencies you'd always have is your neighbors. And that's what she has. You know, the other thing is that so much of Lapine is embracing others from other places to come in here, and then we accommodate them. But also, we need to look internal and say, what can we do for ourselves, too? And that's part of being the city, is not just looking externally, but looking internally. This is a great thing to do.
Yeah.
A great time of the year to do it, you know, that fall celebration.
Mm-hmm. Any comment, Dan?
No, I think it's a good thing to do, and perhaps it might catch on. Maybe other neighborhoods will want to do this something similar, so I think it's a good idea.
Don?
I don't really have much comment. I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to be here.
Oh, that, yeah.
But I think it's a great thing for the community, okay. No question.
Stu? Okay. Then I'd entertain a motion that we allow the city to proceed with the Huntington Meadow cleanup, neighborhood cleanup day on September the 8th, with those items described.
I'll move or make that motion.
To the near city?
Yes.
I second it.
Moved and seconded. Question? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Let the record reflect that it's unanimous. Don motion.
I made the motion.
Okay. Thanks.
Kathy second. Okay, we are at public comments.
Gloria,
name and address, please.
Gloria,
you want to come up here?
No, I just from here. 50662 Deer Forest Drive. Couple things. In all the meetings that we attended on the corridor, there was always talk, well, there has been a lot of talk about the medium. How is this ODOT going to affect the medium situation? Just for general comment, that was for beautification and also for safety for head-on collisions. And then another point, too, is that the play date is on September 8th at the rodeo. I don't know how much involvement there is with that, but that could be a conflict.
Kids in the Park Day.
Thank you. Comment?
Concur with what she said. We have an event.
Any further comments? Hearing none, we will proceed to committee reports.
No committee report.
Nope. Oh. I did attend the COIC meeting, and most of the meeting was on transporting farm goods from the farm to the consumer, how it was to be done. There's a brochure on it. I brought back a couple of copies, and I left them in the city manager's office if anybody's interested in how they can obtain farm produce directly from the farm on a weekly or monthly basis.
Dan, anything?
No, thank you.
Okay.
No.
I will make a short comment about the Mayor's Association conference. Our basket went over at $75. It was one of the two highest that was there. They raised quite a bit of money. There was probably about 45 baskets, and that goes into a scholarship fund, and it's a great event. The If I Were Mayor contest was exciting, and it really brings out the communities, and to see what these elementary kids get to do a little poster, get to draw a poster. The middle school gets to write a letter, and the high school gets to do a media project, and it was absolutely fantastic. I think it's a great way to involve our schools, and the number of cities that did it is rewarding to see so many that go in and do it. And they all get laptop computers and other prizes because they do it. The other thing is that I had an opportunity to sit down with several of the directors of state agencies. There were 19 of them there. So we had an opportunity to sit down with four. And I'll just speak to one of them. And that was the LCDC representative, which is Jim Rowe. And he was extremely complimentary of LCDC's respect for the city of Lapine, and how the city was being looked at and spoke of as a city on its feet, moving forward, and doing an outstanding job in bringing their comp plan together. And he was looking forward to the presentation in September, and apologized for the snafu and thanked us for all of our hard work. And I think that's where I will leave it. Any staff comments?
Just that Stu and myself met with the sheriff captain today and the coordinator for emergency services for the county as a starting point in a discussion that's going to become a much broader discussion about emergency preparedness in our community. And the next meeting is scheduled for August 29th, which is a Wednesday at 10 a.m. I took some notes today. I had a chance to write them up into some kind of format to type them up. But I got 10 pages of notes just from today's meeting. There's just a whole bunch that we need to do to prepare ourselves for any kind of event or circumstance that might come this way. Also, whatever we need to do to make this a command center, because this will be the command center for South Deschutes County and maybe for Lane County. And for, you know, who knows where. So are we prepared for that position? And we've got a lot of work to do to get there. That was a fun conversation too, I might add. And Stu, I thank you very much for putting that together.
Okay. My pleasure. It was something we needed to do, and I'm glad we finally got it rolling.
So yeah. So
stay tuned.
I invite you all to come to the next one, and the public too. The more we are familiar with what all the circumstances out there that we might be subject to and how we might orchestrate and who would be responsible, it's just good. It creates a confidence chip in our community to know that we're out there trying to do that. Okay.
Thank you very much. And council comments? One, two, three. There being no council comments and no further comments of the staff, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
We need a flagpole. Our flag has fallen down.
I've spoke to the city manager.
Okay.
we're going to go across the street, there's one across the street. I'm sorry. I thought it was under the cone of silence.
Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Seconded.
Moved and seconded to adjourn. All those in favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned. Thank you very much.
I'd like to count to compliment you on getting the meeting over by the Christmas.
That's our kind of silence.
Right there.
Mark,
yes. How you could get a compliment for Stu, you got it.
Well, Stu's about to give me a thumbs up.